This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Nick Beery and Steve Marshall met when they were clowns with the Ringling Brothers Barnum and Bailey Circus. Though their paths diverged, they stayed in touch. Beery became a filmmaker. Marshall traveled to Tokyo, where he performs magic for a living. But when the 2011 earthquake and tsunami hit Japan, Marshall struggled to find work. After all, entertainment, kind of the first expense to go in the midst of a disaster like that. So Marshall decided to go on a United States tour, teaching American magicians the tricks that he had learned abroad. Beery tagged along to film it, and the result is Sayonara to Hello. The movie screens at the Ava Gardner Independent Film Festival in Smithfield, November 1st through the 3rd. Today, filmmaker Nick Beery joins us in the studio. Welcome, Nick.
Thank you, Frank. Good to be here.
It's good to have you. And Steve Marshall joins us by phone from Tokyo. Steve, welcome.
Konnichiwa, minasan.
Hello to you, too. So, Nick, tell us how this documentary came into being.
Well, Steve and I have been friends, as you mentioned, since 1984 when we traveled the country as clowns living on a train with Ringling Brothers Circus. And when he told me that he was going to come back to America and do a lecture tour presenting Japanese tricks to American magicians, he said it's almost the same exact path that we took when we were clowns in the circus. And so these little light bulbs went off between him and me, and we did a little Kickstarter campaign. We were able to raise some funds, and we went on the road for a month and had a great time, and the result is a very inspiring movie that I'm very proud of.
Steve, what took you to Tokyo in the first place?
An airplane.
Yeah, there you go. I said to myself, you know what the answer is, Frank, don't you? Turn left at Greenland or something. So then she got off the plane.
I'd been coming back and forth to Japan and working on and off for a while, but then actually it was Disney that brought me over for the first time. They brought me over to Tokyo Disneyland to be the first American magician there for their 15th anniversary.
Wait, the first American magician? Oh, in the theme park.
In their theme park. Yeah. They've had a Japanese magician for 15 years, and they really wanted to try having an American magician, but they were worried about the language barrier. But since I had performed my show before in Japan and could do the whole thing in Japanese, it just all worked out.
And you actually, and you talked about bringing a tour when the tsunami hit, and I guess maybe we should talk about that, because you were doing pretty well, and then there was the earthquake in 2011, right?
Yeah, well, I mean, I've been living here for almost 15 years now, and after 2 years of Disney, I went freelance, and I've got my own. I do a lot of corporate work, and I have a big illusion show. I'm known over here as the ambassador of magic from the USA, and I kind of bring that American feel to all my shows. I kind of bring a Las Vegas kind of feel to the big illusion show, and I've been doing quite a bit of TV commercial work over here also. But yeah, when the earthquake and tsunami hit last year, I mean, you know, the first thing, entertainment just kind of dries up. All my shows were canceled right off the bat. And I'm married and I've got two kids, and all of a sudden I had to find work. And there were some things going on over here, but just not enough. And I just felt that it would work out better. I'd always wanted to do a tour in America anyway, doing this magic lecture tours. So it just worked out.
So
where the work was.
Part of the lecture includes kind of what you learned in Japan. Is Japanese magic fundamentally different from the American style?
They have a different way and a different and very direct way of thinking about things and coming up with their methods for the way they do their tricks. So I had been writing a column for the Society of American Magicians Magic Magazine for 3 years called Asian Astonishments, where I would interview a different Japanese magician every month and write up three of their original magic tricks. So from that 3 years of columns and all those tricks, I picked my favorite 10 out of that series and brought them back to America to teach everybody.
But what is the difference between American and Japanese style? I mean, is there a difference? What is it?
Well, there actually is a traditional Japanese style of magic, which uses a lot of paper. They have a beautiful thing they do where they tear a paper butterfly out of a piece of tissue paper and make it float in the air. It's very simplistic and very direct in its methods. But the stuff that I was teaching, I mean, it was card stuff and coin stuff and, you know, what we think of magic. But it's hard to explain it without giving away any tricks or the methods.
Yeah.
But just the thinking is very direct and very, it's very to the point.
Well, you know, when you say that, though, it does bring to mind what you said earlier about this Las Vegas style, bombastic, lots of noise, you know, flash and dash. And that may be what part of the difference just in terms of presentation. And if I'm right about that, then how did that go over? How did your Las Vegas style go over in Japan?
Well, they love it because what they want, you know, they want to feel like they've taken a mini vacation to America without having to leave the country. Mm-hmm. It's kind of the feeling. So like when I hire dancers, I backstage at my show is like the United Nations because I've got Russian dancers, English dancers, American dancers, and I just put blonde wigs on all of them and we're all Americans for the night.
Nick, tell us about what you hope to accomplish with the documentary and why you decided to relive your days as clowns.
Well, it's something I've always wanted to do. I wanted to tell a story about my clowning days, but I didn't want to be the focus, the centerpiece of the attention. So when Steve said he was coming back and we had this opportunity, I really jumped at it because I could kind of be on the sidelines, but telling the story of my experiences being a clown with my friends, including Steve Marshall, but also something's happened over the last 30 years, and that is live performing has changed. Live performing has changed to the point where how often do you go out to a dinner show? How often do you go see a stage show? How often do you go see a magic show? Not much anymore. And so I wanted to find out, and we look into this during the film, is, you know, what is it like to be a working performer nowadays? That's one of the things I wanted to accomplish with this.
And you actually, Steve, went to clown college. Is that right?
Yes, well, we both did. Nick went, you went in what, 1982, Nick?
30 years ago, and it started basically right after Labor Day, so 30 years ago next week.
Wow. Yeah, Nick went in 82, and then I went the following year in 83. So Nick had already been on the road with the circus for 1 year before I came on the road, and we happened to live across from each other. We lived on a train. Our room was 3 feet wide, 6 feet long and 9 feet high.
Don't call it a room, Steve. It was a roomette.
That's
a port-a-john size.
And you traveled across the country this way. Is there, Steve, a kind of connection? I mean, obviously, they're both, as Nick points out, this is live performance. We don't get that much of it anymore. A lot of music performances, of course, but a connection between clowning and illusion and magic. I mean, is there a tie that kind of binds them apart from their sort of the spectacle of both of them?
Well, you know, it all comes under the same umbrella as variety arts. The variety artists is what we're considered. You know, that includes, you know, clowns, magicians, jugglers, ventriloquists, anybody with a specialty act that's not, you know, considered kind of the normal acting or singing or dancing. That's the variety arts. So, yeah, and there is a real camaraderie among all of us in the variety arts field because we all do something a little bit different and a little bit out of the ordinary than everybody else.
You tell us about the tour now. What were your hopes for that when you came back to the United States?
Well, I've been wanting to do this for a long time. My hopes were to bring the magic over and to just, there's a whole lecture circuit amongst magicians. There's small magic clubs in almost every town in the United States, and guys go around and do these lectures. So my hope was to just come over and share these different ideas with the magicians and, you know, give them a chance to learn it firsthand. I could come over and tell them the stories about these Japanese magicians that I'd met. Not only was I teaching them about Japanese magic, but I was introducing them to people that they may have never heard of if I hadn't have come over or written my column. So that was one goal. I mean, of course, the other goal at that point was to make money to bring back to Japan.
How'd that go for you, Steve?
It went good, actually, if Nick would have stopped spending it all.
On this crazy tour. Well, you know, I know that part of the tour that we see, and we see this in the film, you met up with an autistic man named Luke, who's a friend of yours and a big, big fan of clowns. And I want to play a clip of his mom, Laura Davis, talking about how Luke's obsession with clowns began. And she starts by explaining what she did in his hospital room when he was born.
So I got poster board, drew pictures of clowns, and hung them up on the walls there at the hospital. And when he first came home, I still had those poster boards up in his bedroom. When I finally got some time to draw some new stuff, I drew, like, some Snoopy stuff, put him up. He couldn't talk yet. He went into his bedroom. I had torn the others down. they had gotten old and brittle, so they really ripped when I tore them down. He went into his bedroom, pointed to the walls where the clown pictures had been, and literally just yelled. I mean, just, you know, screaming. He was mad. Pictures had been taken down.
That's from the documentary Sayonara Hello, screening at the Ava Gardner Independent Film Festival in Smithfield. November 1st through the 3rd, Nick Beery, the filmmaker, is here. The subject of the film, Steve Marshall, is on the phone from Tokyo. So, Steve, tell us a little bit more about Luke and his fascination with clowns.
Well, it was funny because I first got contacted with Luke through Skype and Facebook online. I didn't know anything about him. I'd heard some guys on our clown college list. We have kind of a mail list that we all keep in touch with, had mentioned Luke Davis. And Luke just got online and started contacting everybody he could that he could find that were clowns.
I think it's important to say that Luke is a 22-year-old man. He is incredible in many, many ways. He's autistic, and he was born blind in one eye. He has 40% sight in the other eye. Unfortunately, he also has cancer. He can juggle better than I can juggle. He can remember things. It's an obsession. Clowning is an obsession for him, and he is just a wonderful guy. He knows every single clown that's ever been in Ringling Brothers Clown Alley since 1953.
Wow.
So he was contacting me and all the other clowns, Steve as well, of course, and it just was a wonderful, I would say, Steve, would you agree? That's probably the best day of our entire tour was visiting Luke and his mom.
It was great. I mean, it was just incredible. You know, and you said he knows the clowns back to 1953, and I asked him about that, and the only reason he only knows back to 1953 is that's only how far he can find programs going back.
Wow. So he knew you guys, and did he start telling you stuff about yourself you'd forgotten or any of that?
Yes.
You know, yes, he did, and actually he was challenging us because Luke knows all the orders of all the shows, but there's some pieces that are missing to the puzzle. And he would start asking us questions about he would tell me exactly what act I did back in 1984, you know, where I was standing, what I was doing. I mean, he wasn't even born when I was, you know, doing this.
Wow. Things
and
we forgot.
Then, yeah. He would ask me who was standing next to me, and I didn't know. So we had to really think. It was a challenge. But he's amazing.
And there's a wonderful scene in the movie, Nick. Maybe I'll get you to describe it for us.
Sure.
when you guys actually got together and were in the same room.
Yeah, we were outside Atlanta. We did a lecture, and Steve did a lecture. The next day we got a chance to go over there and spend several hours with Luke and his mother. And it was actually the cafeteria of where his mother works because she had to bring him in. And I must mention that also on this tour is Billy Skadlock, a Clown College graduate from 1978, who was the tour manager and our driver. And so it was three of us. And he had – Luke had painted paint artwork for us of our clown faces. And then we just were talking about the old times as if we knew each other, like he was on the road with us all those years ago. And it was really a wonderful, wonderful day. One of the highlights, definitely.
And you even juggled together.
We did juggle, yes. Yeah. Steve and Luke definitely juggled together.
Yeah.
And I will say, Luke is an awesome juggler.
Well, Nick, you also...
Much better.
Nick, you interviewed Bob Fitch, who is a Tony Award-winning director. I want to play this clip now because he talks about what makes magic effective. Let's listen to the clip.
The art is in the person himself, not in the medium of magic. You know, that's the medium. We express ourselves through that. And who are you when you do it? Because magicians think they have to do it all. They have to do all the work. No, no, no. You have to give the audience something to do. You have to give them something to think about.
Right.
Let them be involved. Do you want people to be emotionally engaged with what you do, or you just want an intellectual, how did he do that? Well, if you give them something to do and involve them, they will suspend their disbelief.
That's a clip from the documentary Sayonara to Hello, screening at the Ava Gardner Independent Film Festival in Smithfield, November 1st through the 3rd. Steve, does that resonate with you? That strike you as true?
Oh, it definitely does. You know, and I learned so much just from the hour I got to spend with Bob on that that evening. I mean, it really is. You know, it's you got to play back and forth with the audience and let them give them time to react and sit back and enjoy what's just happened. And not just be trying to fool them all the time, you know, let it go back and forth like that.
That's interesting. You think about this as being an interactive field, and you talked about the performance, the performing arts really, in some ways, falling on hard times. And I guess for magicians, too, you've both talked about the fact that now it's so easy to buy tricks online that we're losing one of the great kind of repositories of the communication of magic. Nick?
Right. Yeah. We went to several of the magic stores, and there aren't nearly as many as there used to be. And it's just an amazing camaraderie. You go in, you hang out, you just talk about magic. Maybe somebody teaches you a trick, then you buy a trick. You come back in a week later and you tell the owner, hey, I learned this trick. And you become friends. And there's these stores. There's a few of them left in the country, one in Baltimore, Denny and Lee's, which was just amazing. They actually have a potbelly pig. That's in the film as well, that just kind of grunts around. I mean, it's just an amazing thing.
And in fact, it used to be a rabbit. But
and now it may be a rabbit again. I don't know. Yeah. But yeah, so those things have kind of gone by the wayside. When you go on YouTube, you can learn a trick, but you're not blending in. The other part of it is, there as John Eakin, a magician in the film, says, there's no place to be bad, meaning when you're a beginner, there's very few places. Mm. You can get jobs on cruise ships, but you have to be established. You can get jobs with Disney, but you have to be established. Where are you going to be bad, you know?
Well, you can do like our producer Alex Granados does. You can just be bad right at our morning meetings. and then again, the afternoon meeting. Yeah, day after day.
Oh, I'm sure he's not that bad.
Yes, he is. tell me.
Whoa.
Steve. No, oh, but he, wow. But he's learning. He's okay. Learning. And I think it's going to be a great thing. And soon, and I'm just afraid to lose him, actually, to the syndicate. Steve, I wonder if making this movie at all and the kind of people you met as a result of pulling this film together gave you any insight into the profession that you had already, you know, that you were already plying, that you were already good at. You learn anything?
You know, as far as learning about the profession, a little bit. As far as learning something about myself, a lot. I mean, it was amazing for me to sit back and watch the final cut of the movie that I really didn't have a hand in. Nick and his partner Dave did the editing of it. And, you know, I sat back and watched how other people see me. The clips that they kept and the things they put in, it was pretty amazing to me, and it was a real gift to be able to do that. And you know, I would thank Nick publicly for what a great job he did on this movie, because I'm really proud of it.
Well, what did you learn about yourself? That's interesting, though. But what did you learn about yourself?
I learned I'm not as stupid as I thought I was. I'm stupider. No.
That's the art of filmmaking. He made you look smarter than you are. And that's how that... No.
Smoke and mirrors and filmmaking, too.
Talk about magic.
Right.
What do you want your viewers to take away from this, Nick?
That's kind of funny. I mean, I'm joking about that, but in a sense, that's true. I'm on stage. I'm most comfortable when I'm on stage. And I've lived my whole life. I've been doing magic since I was 8 years old. I mean, I've never had a real job, quote unquote, real job. I've always done performing, and thank the Lord that I've been able to do that. I've been very lucky that in a profession like this, that I've been able to keep going all these years, through everything. But yeah, I mean, some of the things that just when I was talking in the movie, it was being kind of serious and talking about things. It was just kind of strange to see myself in that capacity on film, because I never see that. I see myself jumping around or being goofy or doing magic tricks, but I never see myself just talking about serious things.
Very cool.
Well, what I'd like to have people go away with is that they can follow their passion no matter what. Whatever responsibilities they may have normally in their everyday life, mortgages and college payments, they can follow their passion, and they should. Follow their dreams, because those dreams are what make us all who we are.
See, now Alex is listening to this, and that just means... Alex, he's actually very good. He is really,
okay,
really good.
Sometimes that's good to hear.
Just before you had your coffee, you're not ready for that handkerchief to be in your face, but but actually he is good. So are you, and thank you both for being on the program.
Our pleasure.
To talk with you. Nick Beery's new film called Sayonara Hello. Steve Marshall. Steve, thanks for talking with us.
Thanks, Frank. Appreciate it.
Steve Marshall stars in that film, and it screens at the Ava Gardner Independent Film Festival in Smithfield, November 1st through the 3rd. And you can find out more at beerymedia.com/merchandise. You spell it B-E-E-R-Y, Beery. And for more information about the film, go to sayonara.com. I'm not going to spell sayonara for you. You'll figure it out. Up next, the Doug Largent Trio. Stay with us.